in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord and leave me here.
Phantom Island.
Welcome back to that old Phantom Island, brought to you by Home Field. I'm sitting here with Ryan Naney, who just laughed when I said that old. Anytime I do proper Southern affectation of anything, you laugh.
Yeah, I'm from Tampa, dude.
Yeah, as I say, you're...
My parents are from California.
You married a Tennessean. You live in Tennessee.
Yeah.
You're around... You work with almost exclusively Southerners now.
Mm-hmm.
And this stuff still tickles you, doesn't it?
In certain moments. I didn't expect you to start the show with that old Phantom Island.
That old. That's old. So, a buddy of mine one time... You remember those music compilations like Now and stuff?
Sure.
Buddy of mine grew up on a farm in outside of Sykeston, Missouri, in the Arkansas part of the Boot Hill. And his grandma got up one day when they were all teenagers, and she's like, grabs a CD off the counter, and she goes, "Huh, look at this old hip hop. That's old Fat Joe." So to this day, sometimes I'll answer the phone when he calls, and I say, "That's old Fat Joe." Old is a great modifier to sound colloquial in Southern.
Sure.
Also, taking someone's name and either lengthening or shortening it relative to what they're normally called is a way to also do that.
That's old Fat Joseph.
Yeah. So you can just be like, the world calls me by my last name,
yeah.
But you know me IRL.
I would say people either call you by your last name or by your first and last name.
Correct. Rarely do you hear the word Steven unless it's Mrs. 38 Godfrey, mm-hmm. And you can feel the air chill when that happens. So my buddy will call me Steve.
It's your wife and my son are the only people I hear call you Steven.
Yeah. Well, your son and I, we're bros. We're bros. He's not quite yet old enough to just, I'm just going to come by, pick him up and be like, cool, we'll be back in a couple hours.
Sure.
But it's happening. All right. We actually have some college football to talk about. You can listen to this entire conversation, which is going to get on point actually in a painful way. We got the fun patter, the pablum, the nonsense out of the way because you had a series of questions while I was you just rudely interrupted me one day while I was probably doing something super busy on mm-hmm. my side of the office.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the throes of the college football coaching carousel cycle. Well, we're in the throes of the first cycle. People are still getting fired, and we're speculating as to who might fill those jobs and others. This thing drags until February. People often forget that, like, oh no. We're going to have listeners and subscribers like asking me about a defensive coordinator position in the ACC.
Right.
It's a big cycle year.
Maybe Clemson's.
Maybe Clemson's for their new head coach. Go to phantomisland.show to listen to this entire wonderful conversation. That's it. We're going to get into it. You came to me with a series of questions, so I'm going to turn it over to you.
Mm-hmm.
And also I want you to sort of tell the audience, like, where was this coming from? Why were you curious?
So, I will start with the homerism built into it. Florida opened, by the time we're recording this, it's been like 3 weeks since Florida opened, maybe a month.
Yeah.
LSU opened shortly afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately there becomes this conversation about LSU is a better job than Florida. Or at least some people want to suggest that LSU is a better job than Florida. As a Florida fan, I have a little trouble with that, but I will admit that, like, my own personal biases come into play here. This was also admittedly before the governor got very publicly involved.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if people still have the same
perspective. Before we went full Robert Penn Warren.
But rather than make this about, hey, what's a better job, Florida or LSU, I wanted to sort of pull it way, 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 way back to the conversation almost. Because this happens every cycle. Jobs open, and we start going through them as people who aren't candidates for these jobs
mm-hmm.
and aren't hiring for these jobs and sort of saying, like, okay, here's the pecking order. This job is better than this one, which is better than this one, but that's not as good as this one over here. And it occurs to me, both in just sort of thinking about it critically and talking to you about coach movement and what agents are sort of thinking about entering the season, et cetera, that I don't feel like that conversation is an accurate reflection of reality. So if I'm just going to distill this down to a simple question or a mm-hmm. simple topic,
okay,
I want to know about how coaches actually think about what is a quote-unquote good job.
Oh, man.
And not the way that media members or fans or just people on social media think about what is a good job.
This is going to be tricky. And so you provided these questions to me, and I thought about, well, how can we do this in a podcast format where every response to every question or qualifier for the job isn't, well, it depends.
Because that's, like, to be clear, I asked you this, and you said, I'm going to make some phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And you did. And what you got back was basically, this is a highly, to make it a little more fancy than it depends, is this, that's a highly subjective question.
I think if you have a good agent,
yeah,
everything is tailored.
Okay.
Everything is bespoke. And so when a job opens, it's not so much, let's just jam in the top four guys I've got and see if I can get my top four guys to interview for the A-list job opening. I really feel like, having done this for a long time, that great representation is going to say, like, all right, what about this fits you? What about your goals fits this job? What specifically do you want? What do you not want? What are the things that you don't like about this? Like, how can we tailor this for you? You might have a signature schematic style if you come from one side of the ball. Mm-hmm. Which side of the ball you come from matters, obviously. Are you a great fundraiser? Are you type A? Are you extroverted? Are you introverted? But there are introverted head coaches.
It's interesting. You, like, I happen to, for another project we're doing, I happen to be reading a little bit about the process that where Mississippi State hires Dan Mullen. And there's a lot of, like, reporting about the process they went to. They talked to a lot of sort of former coaches, including Rich Rodriguez, about sort of like, hey, should we run the spread?
Like, yeah.
How does that work or not work? And it was interesting sort of hearing about how, like, Mississippi State hiring Dan Mullen wasn't necessarily so much about, oh, we think we want Dan Mullen spread. It was like, we want to go in a specific direction because we think it will shorten the talent gap between us and the rest of the conference. And Dan Mullen happened to be the person that they landed on for that.
Yeah, well, that used to be a big consideration.
Yes.
It's funny because certain things have fallen out of favor, which is another thing that's going to affect this. So going into this, let's just say right now, the caveat is everything is subjective, conditional, contextual. Blah, blah, blah. There is no, what game was I watching? It was Army. I was watching Army play Temple on Saturday morning. And, you know, there's a guy on the Army coaching staff on the sideline that just has the binder.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know which analytics firm assembles that binder for them. And down distance and time of game, all of the context is in there, and then the binder just has, like, a red square or a green square on whether you're going to go for it on fourth down, right? And because they're a triple option, there's a lot more green squares on fourth down. So none of that exists here.
Right.
Unfortunately, the dreaded word vibes comes into play more often than I would like it to. I think if y'all be the audience, if I could take you into this process of, like, the people I meet and the, you know, the stupid mixers I go to. I don't go to as many, but, you know, the industry events.
Depends on if Coach's Convention is in Nashville or not.
I'm so excited to go to Charlotte in January, let me tell you. You would be shocked at the people who make these hires.
Okay.
Because I think a good, smart person always thinks of their limitations first, or generally psychopathic egomaniacs are like, I'm totally qualified. Like, most people are like, well, I don't know enough about football to do that. Like, most educated people are sitting there, bro, you would be shocked at who signs off on these deals and how much they know about football. I guarantee you there's 133 athletic directors in the country right now. I would bet my life that half, less than half, if I said, what does it mean when a defensive back banjos? I bet half would know. Shit, I bet 20% would know.
But some of them still make very successful hiring decisions.
I bet. I don't know if half could show me where the A-gap is.
Okay.
I don't know if maybe half could tell me where the slot receiver would go.
Sure.
Maybe.
Yeah.
If I said, where can you show me the seam? That's pretty easy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, show me where the seam, when we say we hit him in the seam, can you do that? So, if you're a ball coach,
yeah,
think about what I just laid out for you.
Mm-hmm.
You want to reduce everything to knowns.
right?
The old Sabin saw that I always go back to was, you know, this instead of this machine kills fascists, Woody Guthrie, it's this machine kills doubt and uncertainty. That was Nick Saban. This machine kills uncertainty. God, that's a lot of uncertainty I just gave you. You just got some, like, fundraising, glad-handed, shark suit-wearing dickhead who's going to go with which way the wind blows or whatever booster makes him more anxious, or this looks good and I saw how people were excited about this on TV, this offense.
Yep.
Like, I talk a lot about Mike Elko these days. There are other FFCs I've talked about. Like, so I think we've laid enough conditional groundwork here. We're going to move on.
Okay.
What I did to answer your questions is I took three names, and they're three current names. But what I did was I took the young up-and-coming G5 coach, and I pulled Alex Golish kind of at random. But if you are a listener to this network and you listen to the Single Wing, and maybe even the last coaching show we did, I'm pretty sure I've laid it out twice. The Golish is in a great position to stand firm or to stay
put. He can maybe do the Sumrall thing of...
I think South Florida is probably the best G5 job of the next 5 years.
Okay.
And they're doing a great job. And so if he doesn't feel super great about whatever looks he's getting, maybe he stands pat. So we're going to take Alex Golish as a really unique... Like, John Sumrall probably has more heat around him at the G5 level. I think Golish probably has the longest lasting lily pad in the G5, because we've seen, like, famously, remember Seth Luttrell at North Texas?
Sure.
Like, one day it won't be there, you know?
Yeah, right.
Where's Seth Luttrell? He was fired as Oklahoma's OC last year. I don't know what he's doing now. So I took Golish because we get to be a little choosier in this exercise. Okay, so that's like category number one. Category number two is a sitting head coach who's experiencing success and he's in a Power 4 job, but a mid 2.
Yeah.
Brent Key at Georgia Tech.
Yes. And a tricky mid 2 in a lot of ways.
How so?
Well, you're in Georgia, so you aren't doing the thing where you're like, ah, shit, I'm in Boston. And I'm far from sort of like the most fertile recruiting grounds. You're
right.
In Atlanta, so you have like geographic proximity to talent. But you also, we've talked about the athletic director situation. You had your like superstar AD fundraiser. He left.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have the third category, which is, are you currently right? Which is a question that you can't really answer right now, is are you riding the wave of like program legend quarterback?
Right.
And is that a repeatable thing? And nobody can know that right now. It's the same thing we're talking about with Clark Lee. Like,
yeah.
Do you need to harvest this wheat while you can, or are you about to show like, no, I can do this with multiple iterations?
Just as an aside, I just came from doing in-studio Nashville radio this morning, and I spent a third of the time just whooping Vandy's ass on, like, why haven't you extended this man? Are you going to lose this man to Penn State? Third category is James Franklin.
Speaking of Penn State, yeah.
Yeah, so James Franklin. So why do you think I put James Franklin on the board?
I think you put James Franklin on the board because he doesn't have... not by his own choice. He doesn't have the decision of like, am I staying or not? He's purely a free agent.
Yeah,
so the decision making.
I wanted to put a free agent out there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll tell you this right now. Obviously, like, Franklin has real heat around him.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interest between Florida State and James Franklin.
Yeah.
There's a tremendous amount of interest between Virginia Tech and James Franklin.
Yes.
One of those jobs is technically open as we record this.
But I think James Franklin is also on this list because, and I may be reaching here, I think if you're a free agent, your clock looks different. Alex Golish can sit for a year.
That's right.
And see what happens.
That's right.
The longer you stay out,
mm-hmm.
if you are a James Franklin, Jimbo, mm-hmm. Urban Meyer type, we saw this happen with Houston Nutt.
Yeah.
Every year it was like, Houston Nutt's interested in this job and that job, but like... it's very hard, I think, to keep that flame going when you are completely out of the game and you're just doing media. Or
if you're familiar with the Houston Nutt joke, Ryan described it accurately. The reality in football was that he was never, ever coming back because he had salted the earth with so many consecutive athletic directors.
Mm-hmm.
And when you undermine athletic directors consistently, see also Hugh Freeze, it's poison. So what I have up here is essentially a spectrum of urgency.
Sure.
Okay. And at the middle is someone who's at his alma mater.
Yep.
But the AD who hired him is not is there. Not. He's had yep. an extension.
Yeah.
He's in Atlanta, but Tech's not the easiest place to get all
yes,
the talent in.
Yes, sure.
Okay, but like you can win the ACC, but. So yeah. right in the middle is a lot of sort of, I could say, a real crossroads situation.
Yeah.
The one thing that I'll add as an asterisk before we move on, I put James Franklin on the board and not Jimbo Fisher and certainly not fucking Urban Meyer or anyone else. What's the difference between James Franklin and Jimbo Fisher and Urban Meyer?
James Franklin hasn't won a national championship.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. So that adds to the urgency.
Yeah.
All right. So I just pulled out some of your
categories.
Concerns.
And things, yeah. I sort of was like, what do coaches, and we'll go, you can go through them on the board,
yeah.
but I was like, let's talk about the different sort of categories of things coaches might look at to say, is X a good job or not?
There is one, by the way, that I forgot to write up there, and I'll just add it at the end.
Okay.
So I have three words for the first category, money, salary, assistant pool, because it's going to mean a lot.
Okay.
The second one is NIL.
Also money.
Yeah, yes. but money right, that but doesn't go, yeah, money yeah. that goes to the young people.
Yeah, sure.
Building, so apparatus, it can be practice facility, it can be stadium, it can be any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Playoff path. Previous titles, I'll mm-hmm. get to that in a second.
Yeah.
And then the last one is, I would say, managing up, let's call it.
So okay.
really, it's like who you're working for, how much of a fucking headache is it, how many belt buckle ass alumni booster pricks are going to come into your office telling you you should run four verts, okay? All right?
Okay.
So we have Alex Golish, Brent Key, and James Franklin.
Yeah.
Let's maybe add type to each one of those. So it's a Alex Golish type.
This is not necessarily a like, this is the brain of this person. This is like, this is what you might be considering.
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, these are not all represented by the same agency, although Key and Franklin are represented both by CAA. Golish is WME. All right. I don't think that really matters for what we're doing. Okay. Money, salary, and assistant pool. I could have checked the box as a – so I have checks next to some of these as like, well, that's mandatory.
Yeah.
Okay? Technically, it's mandatory everywhere.
Sure.
All right?
There is a, like, floor you need to hit.
I checked the Alex Golish type and the Brent Key type but not the Franklin type. Here's why. Alex Golish has not made his money yet. And this
sure.
is an important thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay? James Franklin has made his money, and he just made a lot of money
mm-hmm.
from Penn State, right? He'll have an offset, whatever. But the bank account is solid. The generational wealth is intact.
Right.
We're good to go. Brent Key, you're kind of in the mid. So you couldn't necessarily take a sweetheart deal. In fact, one would argue in a lot of ways you're under a sweetheart deal. So is Dillingham. So is Lee. The alma mater thing is interesting, right?
Like yeah.
It's, your hometown discount kind of sucks.
Yes, it depends on if it comes with the trade-off of like hometown patience and, you know, generosity. Yeah.
So if I'm your agent, Ryan, and you're yeah. Alex Golish, I have to get you fucking paid.
Yeah.
And you're Alex Golish and you're at USF, so you're not going to be able to walk in and command the Nick Saban Kirby
right.
Smart salary, but what
yeah.
you have to do is go into a situation that has an initial deal that leads to the potential for extension to have that mega deal.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%.
You have to come in and get a deal, like, for instance, when Billy Napier left Louisiana Lafayette for Florida, okay? When Hugh Freeze left Arkansas State for Ole Miss. That's back before everyone in the SEC West was paying that kind of money.
Yeah.
So if you're Alex Golish leaving South Florida, this goes for Willie Taggart, who left South Florida, went to Oregon. I'm trying to think if there are any other jumped up South, you know,
at USF specifically, not really.
Scott Frost goes home, gets the mega deal
sure.
right from UCF to Nebraska. So
sure.
you have to have that intact where it's
sure.
like money, salary has to be a concern.
Lane going to Ole Miss from FAU.
No, not Lane, because Lane,
oh,
first
okay.
off, Lane comes from a little bit okay. of generational wealth.
Oh,
he had
yeah,
already
sure.
had a buyout
he had
from
the USC.
USC
job.
He'd already
yep.
had a buyout
sure.
from the Raiders.
Right. right.
Lane is kind of impossible to put
okay,
up on
never
this board.
Mind. Yep.
Just don't say Lane
retracted.
For the remainder of the show, because goddamn, you want to talk about context.
Okay.
Alex Golish needs to get paid. He needs to get his deal.
But that's, like, just to put a little bit of a bookend on that,
mm-hmm.
that's why the, like, Lane Kiffin to Florida, LSU,
yeah.
Auburn, whoever, those are good reasons to explain, like, why a move that in other instances, in almost any other instance, if you said the sitting head coach at Ole Miss has been offered the Florida job, it would just sort of be like, well, that's happening. But I think you're giving enough context here to explain why the calculus is different in this case.
$15 million a year wouldn't be the thing that pulls Lane out of Oxford for Gainesville.
Right.
It would be something that he feels like on field, there's a difference.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. But Alex Golish, you got to get paid.
Yeah.
Anybody, any of these guys, John Sumrall, anybody at that G5 level as a young head coach, you haven't had that generational wealth that get right money.
Yeah.
Okay. I could rattle off other names, Ryan Silverfield, maybe someone who's a candidate at Arkansas right now. So salary is a primary concern.
Yep.
You're going to come in on a good deal initially on your first. You're going to hopefully win enough to get that extension. Then all of a sudden you get the fat buyout. And then, bam, you got your money the way a James Franklin very much got his money from Penn State and Vanderbilt. I mean, not as much at Vanderbilt, but obviously Penn State. So Golish is going to need a salary. Like, salary is going to be a primary concern at that place. Franklin, very, very little concern on a primary salary. In fact, he would come into a situation. Let's talk about Florida State for a second.
Yeah, sure.
Credit's not great. Okay? Credit score, not great in Tallahassee.
Sure.
James Franklin does not need to come in and say, God damn it, you got to pay me $9 million a year right now or $10 million a year right now. What he's going to say is, let's work within, let's like, if I think he has duty to mitigate.
Yes, he does.
Okay, it's at been, Penn
yeah,
State.
Yeah, that has been argued for the benefit of Penn State fans to be like, maybe they won't owe him anything. And you know what? Maybe.
Who's to say? Definitely cheering on James Franklin to get hired somewhere else.
Sure.
So you have wiggle room within there. Like James Franklin, if he's smart, is going to come in there and get right up to the edge of a lawsuit from Penn State. And I would take $4 million. I would take something Florida State.
So for context here, Alex Golish makes about $2.5 million. Brent Key makes about $4.5 million.
Yeah, but I think there's a kicker in Key's deal.
And there are like, that's without incentives and, you know, performance. Blah, blah, blah.
Okay, let's move on real fast and let's talk about salaries and assistant pool. I separate out a little bit because it's starting to separate where it used to be. You had an assistant pool, which was the amount of money that sole amount of money used to be like $2 million has to pay your entire staff,
right?
Now,
for context, James Franklin gave $3 million. Well, Penn State gave $3 million to his defensive coordinator.
To Jim Knowles,
the year
right.
He got fired.
Well, this is actually where I'm headed. You want to have the ability to hire a mega OC, a mega DC, both, and then also have a pool for all the other staff. So they're kind of separating at the bigger jobs, all right?
So let's use Brent Key as an example here.
So Brent Key is in the middle of the situation.
Yeah.
If you're pulling Brent Key out of Georgia Tech, salary for himself is not the number one concern.
Yeah.
The ability maybe to go somewhere. It's funny because Brent Key has Buster Faulkner right now. Like, he has a really strong...
Well-regarded OC.
He has a really strong staff.
Yeah.
But it also, like, everybody's just sitting around being like, man, Buster Faulkner should be at Georgia. Buster Faulkner should be here. Like, he's going to, and he'll probably end up as a head coach eventually. Like, so Brent Key's looking at this situation and saying, yeah, I definitely want to talk about, like, if you're going to pull me out of Georgia Tech, my alma mater, and I'm going to go somewhere. Like, Jay Batt calls, his former athletic director is now at Michigan State. And you're like, God damn, I'm going to Michigan.
Yeah.
I'm a Georgia boy in Atlanta, and it's hard to pull this, and I got to compete with these guys. Like, yeah, I want to know. Are we going to pull mega deals for coordinators?
Yeah.
And am I still going to have enough to bring this linebacker's coach, this safety's coach, et cetera?
Right.
Alex Golish is going to have a concern of that, but he's not going to have the leverage to do it yet. He's going to have to bring young coaches with him, and they're going to have to earn it the same way he's going to earn that extension, and they're going to build that out over time. Franklin, I feel like this is almost a guarantee that Franklin has to go into a situation like Florida State where he can also – you would have a situation next year – at Florida State where you know the name of the two coordinators at Florida State. And that's where it gets tricky, and this is why all this is tied together, because Franklin's going to tamp down his ask, his individual salary, because he needs to bring in, even though it didn't work at Penn State, which is a weird thing about Franklin, is he was given everything.
Yeah, but also looking back over his tenure at Penn State, a lot of turnover. Not a situation where it was like, oh, he's had this coordinator by his side for like most of his, like both coordinator jobs turned over a fair amount.
The problem, so I'll push back on that because Brent Pry's there for a really long time. He leaves for a head coaching job. Yeah. That's not turnover to me. That's graduating.
Yes, that's fair.
Joe Moorhead's there. He's probably the best OC that he ever has. He goes to Mississippi State as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. you know, having Kotelecki and Knowles there at the last minute, what they were trying to do, I think, was really just trying to Xerox Ohio State in so many different ways, structurally, yeah. and then literally pulling Knowles over. Obviously, that doesn't work. We can talk about this is not going to be a pot on why Penn State
failed.
Yeah,
sure.
But Franklin is, and I'm also not putting up Franklin saying like it wasn't his fault, because I do think it definitely was. I'm bringing this information, and I picked James Franklin to use today because he's getting a shit ton of buzz.
And I think what you're telling me is that this is a particularly sensitive issue for jobs that he's interested in, because he knows success and failure for him at whatever job he potentially takes next very much turn on this.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So as you can see, where the money goes into the in the pockets of which coaches and when and how dramatically differ depending on what phase of life you're
in. Yeah, sure.
Right? So let's move on to NIL. This is a check across the board. I don't really understand like how anyone could argue this. NIL slash rev slash the situation. This is a primary concern because right now coaches are believing that this is the number one thing. Like, we can go ahead and actually, I put building next to it for a reason. God, Ryan, we don't have to go down memory lane or you know, dig up various episodes of Who Killed College Football. WKCFB.com. You can listen today. We know how much of a front facilities were. Facilities, finger quote.
Yeah.
Right? Were before you could legally pay players.
Yeah, sure.
We have beautiful facilities. That was how we were, one, getting rid of the money that was an inconvenient truth.
Look at the sleep pods.
And then two, yeah, like, oh my gosh. It's,
we have a barbershop.
Yeah, there's a fun rec room and ping pong table and shit. That's just not a concern anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a facility. You have to have a football-dedicated weight room. You need to have a football-dedicated
indoor facility, indoor practice.
I was about to say a rehab facility, like a training table and a room. And like it's funny. We used to always say like, why do you need your fucking hologram in a whirlpool, whatever. But like having those facilities on site for football, that you got to have. There's boxes you have to check.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not saying we're all going to do this in a fucking trailer outside of the a literal fucking trailer outside of the football field anymore. But obviously the emphasis on the ridiculousness of facilities construction has just, I wouldn't say imploded, but plummeted.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, let's pay good players. Vanderbilt's a great example, and Northwestern's a great example.
Do you think this answer would be different for Alex Golish specifically if South Florida wasn't in the process of building their own stadium?
No, I don't.
Okay.
You mean his urgency to leave?
Yeah.
No, like you are correct.
If USF was still like, well, I don't know, we'll just keep leasing from the Bucks, do you think that would be would change his calculus?
A little bit.
Okay.
I do think that what's going on at South Florida is pulling momentum. They're finally kind of realizing, oh, we have to keep pace with UCF. I would say yes.
Can I add one more question about
this? Okay.
Do you think any of this is part of why UCLA is looking like they're going to leave the Rose Bowl and start playing at SoFi? Do you think that changes how they can go out into the market and talk about that job and sort of say like, you're going to be in this like brand new NFL facility.
I have more questions about that.
Okay.
Like,
I'm not saying that's the primary or even secondary reason.
I think that's
happening.
A laterally stupid move, which is a whole nother podcast about UCLA. And I do think
it's a lot easier to fill that stadium though.
I guess. It's also like, I just fielded a question on Single Wing about like, man, why is UNLV so excited about playing in Allegiant when it sounds like a cavern when they're in there? Like, yeah, I just think that's a laterally stupid move for UCLA.
That's fine. I'm not opining as to whether it's wise or not.
When I said USF's getting it all together, they're going to be the best G5 job in college football for the next 5 years. The stadium's a huge part of that. Okay, but look. Bottom line is, if you went to Alex Golish at South Florida right now and he said, you're not going to get in the stadium, we're going to delay it 3 more years and give you X, like 5 million, 10 million more in NIL, he'd take it.
So let me ask you one more NIL sharpening point.
All right.
When coaches are looking at new job, what's the NIL situation? Are they looking at it relative to this is the pot I have now and you're offering me more than that? Or are they looking at it to the extent they can, because not all of this information is public, of like, how competitive will I be in my new conference?
More the latter than the former.
Okay.
Because the former is so hard to discern, and we still don't know how much things are costing.
Right.
These numbers need to be public. I mean, sure. Of course I'm going to say that as a member of the media, but I'm also a little conflicted on, like, I'm not going to cheer on the Clearinghouse if it starts shooting down NIL deals because they have a moral, like, reservation against it. I do think we need to know. So we just kept throwing it around last year, like, Ohio State paid $20 million.
Right.
Well, fucking.
Based on what?
Receipts, please.
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to reimburse you until you show me the receipts. Like,
sure.
Carson
Beck signing with Miami is another of, like, everyone just sort of said, like, the number is this. And it's like,
yeah.
But Miami people are like, number's not really that.
So stupidly, I believe in free markets in this one case because mm-hmm. I do think that if you showed a ledger for Ohio State.
Yeah.
That was less than, which I'm betting it might be. Like the dumbness of Miami, or they paid, let's just say they both paid $20 million last year. That's even funnier because look at what that yielded Miami. I think if anything, it's like, you want to pay Carson Beck?
Right.
Pay Carson Beck $10 million.
Right.
But then turn your books over so the rest of college football can turn around and go, you know what? Maybe let's not spend 10. If it's $20 million, don't spend 10 on this, or don't spend 4.5 on Carson fucking Beck.
I have one more question I thought of. And you can answer this however you like. The NIL conversation is one that these coaches and anyone else in the market can have plainly and openly. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your NIL situation. Where's the money coming from? What's
Definitely.
The plan?
Yeah.
Whatever. Go back to, let's say, 2019 and earlier. You are a coach interviewing for a job. Do you even have the conversation? Do you
no.
have? Okay. All right.
Some maybe. 19?
Well, in the pre-NIL Bagman era, let's say, is this even on the table in any way to talk
you mean
about?
Like 2014?
Sure.
Oh, they knew, yeah, but it was all by reputation.
Okay, so it's not actually a discussion.
That's when
have.
I used to laugh and be like, man, he's a great recruiter, and I'm like, no, motherfucker, he's got 10 good he's got 10 good old boys behind him who are making him look like a
and
great recruiter.
And the problem is they don't go with you to your new school.
No, that I mean, now you're getting into old Bagman talk where it's always like, oh man, he's such a great recruiter. He convinced him on signing day to flip. Mm-hmm. Bitch, please.
Okay.
Oh my
okay.
God.
Okay. Sorry.
So NIL obviously is important at every level.
Yeah.
I want to bridge NIL into the next one and say playoff path.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, I'm checking all the boxes here. In other words, like if you're Alex Golish, Brent Key, or James Franklin, you're concerned about a playoff path. It's hard to check that box for Brent Key. I'm going to be honest, because Brent Key is going to leave for a Power 2 job if he leaves Georgia Tech.
Yes, but
he's not going anywhere else in the ACC or the Big 12.
Right, but he's not. The Texas job is not open. Texas A&M job, like the jobs that have the clearest win now path to win the SEC championship or even like be a one loss team.
So
those are not available.
And by the way, I don't think this is going to happen, but if you are his former athletic director who hired him at Georgia Tech, you're JBAT, and you said, come to Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
I can't check that box if I'm Brent Key. It's a priority, but you just took a job with a shittier playoff path.
Today, yes. The question is sort of like,
Rhett Lashley,
4 years from now, is that the case?
Yeah, man. I mean, Are you talking about because of hypothetically you build up Michigan State or that the format changes?
Both.
You can't think like that.
Well, no, I'm just saying like if that's
everybody,
yes,
every agent in the world would love to have insider knowledge that hey, Brent, you should go to Michigan
State.
It's
not even insider knowledge though, because like the Big Ten has been pretty out front about we want guaranteed spots and we want to expand the playoff.
Yeah, but Sankey's,
doesn't mean it'll happen.
I was gonna say, Sankey's already said that we're not in favor of that.
Yes.
So like, yeah, if someone secretly knew somehow that like, hey, the Big Ten is going to have 6 guaranteed in an 18-team format.
All right.
Then it's like, oh, shit, okay.
So I think absent that sort of speculation, in the Brent Key Michigan State thought exercise, the question is, can I be one of the, let's say, top 2 teams in the ACC, or
yes.
can I be one of the top 4 in the Big Ten?
Rhett Lashley just did this.
Right.
Arkansas doesn't want me to talk about this. I mean, like, or not me, but just anybody. Brett Lashley, native son, mama called,
mm-hmm.
Northwest Arkansas, staying at SMU.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk, like, staying at SMU is a big deal, but that's because he believes, and also, like, the reason why I know this to be for a fact, the next day he's on Twitter retweeting people saying, like, oh, the playoff committee doesn't give the ACC enough credit.
Sure.
Talking about other teams, not even SMU. SMU has 3 losses.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the committee shitting on Georgia Tech, committee shitting on Virginia. So he's like, fuck, I'm going to stay here and be the best of 3 to get that bid in.
Yeah.
But then I'll also stump for the years that, like, hey, SMU did not win the conference last year and made the playoff.
Yeah.
That's absolutely what informed Rhett Lashley. That and the fact that he's got some of the craziest fucking rich white people I've ever seen in Highland Park, Dallas, that are saying, you want a jet? Yeah. You want a jet made out of cocaine?
Yeah.
You want a jet that turns into cocaine? It's SMU, man.
Okay.
He turned down his home state, his home program.
Yeah.
In the SEC. Because he looked at that and said, fuck, man, I'm going to get into
harder.
I'm going to get into that prison fight every year.
Sure. Yeah.
If you're goalish, playoff path is interesting to me because you want an accessible playoff path. You want one that's at least a comp to what you have now. If you leave the G5 for almost any power job, it's arguably better.
It's definitely, unless,
let's throw an asterisk in front of there.
Yeah.
This is why I picked Alex Golish. In the next 5 years, is it going to be easier if the playoff format is the exact same for the next five seasons?
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be easier to get into the playoff at South Florida or Virginia Tech or Arkansas, places that have kicked the tires on Golish?
I think the answer will still be a power program, because I think the new Pac-12 is going to throw the math off a lot. I think the new Pac-12 is adding one more like big competitive piece for a limited piece of property.
I think that if I'm at what people are saying is the best American job,
mm-hmm,
in the short term, it's the safest bet.
Okay.
All right.
But I can understand why reasonable minds might differ on this question.
Let's jump to the other end of the spectrum. If you're James Franklin right now,
yeah,
think about your personal interpretation of what's in front of you in the ACC versus the unscalable mountains that you ran up against every fucking year in the Big Ten. If you're James Franklin, you're not looking at Ohio State every year. You're not looking at Michigan every year.
You're not playing Oregon.
How's Clemson looking?
You're not playing Indiana.
How's Clemson looking right now?
Sure.
Miami feels beatable.
Mm-hmm. Florida State's, yeah, right. Yep.
So whether James Franklin ends up at Virginia Tech or Florida State, I guarantee you that's the biggest check on the board, is James Franklin is thinking, I get to the playoff easier here.
I got to be better than Georgia Tech and SMU and Louisville and Virginia right now.
Or in theory, in an ideal year, Clemson and Miami.
Okay.
All right.
You think that's part of why Bill Belichick took the UNC job?
No, he took the job he could get because it was offered to him.
Okay.
Full stop.
Gotcha.
He didn't even know what the fucking playoff
was. Yeah,
he didn't know shit all about the college football playoff. He didn't know anything about college football. My fucking Marco Rubio. Previous titles.
Not checked on any of these.
No, checked on Franklin.
Oh, okay.
Checked on Franklin because you want a place that has done this before in some capacity. It's an asterisk if you're considering Franklin and Florida State to some degree, because it was a BCS championship. I know it still counts. Don't come for me in the comments.
But there's a lot. But also, like, they have a lot of national championships. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't the same thing as being like, we have a title from 19. It's not. Minnesota also has a lot of national championships.
It's not Minnesota or Ole Miss.
But it's not the same conversation.
It's not Minnesota or Ole Miss.
Sure.
The problem here is, if I'm James Franklin, I need to know that the check writers have the same goal as James Franklin's trying to win a national title,
mm-hmm,
to justify his entire fucking coaching existence. I don't think he would go to a program short of like an Oregon that doesn't already have a national title, because right now, so we can play the game, like, what's the non-title holding program in the modern era that's the likeliest to win one, and it's probably Oregon?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Florida State's won one in the BCS.
Yeah.
They've won two in the BCS?
Yeah, I think they've won at least two in the BCS. I'd have to go back and look, but yeah.
Obviously, they won one. They've been to the
playoff.
The disputed era of the 80s and 90s. They've won them. They have POC, proof of concept, not person of color. So that matters if you're James Franklin.
Yeah,
Golish doesn't really
matter.
They went
undefeated two years ago. You know, like, they got screwed and left out of the playoff, but like, they could have been there.
A lifetime.
It was a lifetime ago.
All right, Alex Golish doesn't need that. Here's why. Go to Arkansas, win 9 or 10, then get hired away by somebody bigger.
Okay.
It's just not. Go to Virginia Tech, win 10, 11, get hired off by somebody bigger. Okay? It's not mandatory. Brent Key, it's very conditional. I didn't check the box. I think maybe you could. Because it would help justify why you're leaving Georgia Tech.
Brent Key's at a place that's won a national title in our lifetime. Yeah,
they fucking split one in 90 with Colorado. I have a hard time believing anything before the BCS, and then those have an asterisk next to them. Because this game's...
I'm not going to...
This game's foundations... It's not because I'm saying, like, oh, you suck, you don't have one. I'm saying, like, this game's foundations have changed so much.
Okay.
Again, who killed college football? And then the last thing that I forgot to put on this board in front of us that only Ryan and I could see right now... is managing up, and that just means the people that you have to deal with.
Right.
The culture, the athletic director specifically, the school president, and then whatever booster Illuminati you're choosing to you know...
tie yourself to.
Fucking perform a shroud ceremony in the dark with. So, technically, you check all these boxes. Everybody has to feel comfortable with what they're managing up on. So, for Brent Key to go, he would really have to... That's probably where he would want to feel... Like, I haven't had a primary on Brent Key this entire time. He's kind of in the middle because it's a hard thing to discern.
Yeah.
Which is what makes this so interesting is, like, how does someone at their alma mater who's doing pretty well decide to jump? And how do you know it's the right thing to jump towards? And the answer is we don't.
Right.
But in this case, this is something you jump towards. It's just a better life above you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a better situation where people are saying, we will support you, we will give you what you need. It kind of ties back into the money thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also in a situation where the AD who hired him left. It's a big deal. Everybody technically checks this box. Franklin is going to be the one where it's the most probably consequential because Franklin wears on ADs. He wears on school presidents. It is one of the reasons why Penn State was finally like, there were a lot of people in Happy Valley just very happy to clip his ass immediately after Northwestern.
The Northwestern loss, yeah.
Because it's just...
The equity was not there.
He grates on people.
Yeah, right.
He reminds me of... So Tom Herman's like that. James Franklin is like that. Just ceaseless.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the most special boy. I don't have this special thing. Why don't I have this special thing? It's one way to go about it. It's not that dissimilar from Kirby, but Kirby has a particular, again, native son, sheen and ability to politic about him.
Also, Kirby won 2 titles.
No, this is before Kirby won 2 titles.
Yeah, sure. I guess I'm saying, like, when you do this it works.
Now he gets to just tap his staff, right, and then they bring the emperor whatever he wants.
But it kind of retroactively makes it makes you look smart rather than difficult when it works. Like if James Franklin had been in the exact way you described, but they win the national championship last year.
Yeah.
That, like, you and I can both see the, like, ESPN story about, like, how James Franklin demanded excellence from Penn State.
Yeah.
And so, like...
That's
is not
what Kirby.
Yes,
yes. That's why everyone in Georgia's like, fuck yeah, we killed open records law. We got 2 national titles.
Right. So you can.
Yeah. We'll reinstitute prima nocta, motherfuckers. Does that win us 2 more?
That behavior can be spun in a different way depending on if it works or not.
Uh huh. Yes.
There's one category you don't have on the board or on your notes that has come up. And I'm not going to ask you to use these 3 names because I don't think we need to. A lot of this also comes down to, like, what I can only label as personal shit. And sometimes we hear about this sometimes we hear about this with, like, oh, you know, they want, they've got a big family and they want to go somewhere. They care about, like, the school system.
I know where you're getting at, yeah.
Or
yeah.
They don't, like, I'll use Chip Kelly as an example. Chip Kelly took the UCLA job instead of the Florida job, even though, especially at the time, Florida would have checked, I think, every one of these boxes more than UCLA would have.
Yep.
But a lot of it, I think, came down to Chip Kelly wanted to be on the West Coast again and didn't want to be, like, the focal point.
He didn't want to be in a fishbowl southern town.
Right. And that was an important, like, I'm not saying I'm mad that Florida didn't hire Chip Kelly, but that was the thing that sort of tipped... This job is good and this one is not.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of that goes into this that almost never gets talked about.
Well, that's because I think it's because we share an office. And I think that's because you are privy to a lot of what I tell you that I never put out there.
100%. Yes. I'm not asking you to, but I'm saying, like, to go back to sort of the topic at hand, there is, like, kind of a very relatable, is this a good job?
Yeah.
That really gets down to, like, I am a person with a family, and I have to think about, like,
oh, I heard
will
one,
my will they be happy here? Will we have a good life here?
Oh, what could I use?
I mean, there's one G5 coach that didn't take USF, wasn't interested in USF in the last cycle. That's the one that you asked me about, and I won't name him because basically didn't want to be in a city. Didn't want to be in a major city.
Sure.
Has a very, like, 1980s Reagan Republican view of living in a city as, like, a dangerous thing.
Yeah, all right.
There's another one that was after Auburn went into free fall after Lane Kiffin, before they hired Freeze. There was one who, I guess I have to say allegedly, there is not, like, a Catholic K-12 school system in Auburn, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And one coach's,
and that was a deal
one
breaker.
Coach's family was just like, no, that's not going to work for us.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, yeah, there are a lot. You hear about things I hear about because I use you as a sounding board.
And
these guys are not as cookie cutter or monolithic as you think.
Yes, exactly.
They're idiosyncratic
not,
weirdos.
And they're not as spreadsheet as I think people. I think, like, a lot of the default for looking at these jobs goes to a lot of the categories you have on the board, but it doesn't get into, like, the specifics of what, how those things matter in different ways to different people, and it absolutely doesn't get into, like,
well, hey man, look, I'm 44 and I have 3 kids and a wife.
Yeah,
I've been married for 15 years.
Yeah,
I've been with that woman, tack on another 3 of dating, roughly. Yeah. Like, I play this game all the time with my wife, where she's like, I know you enjoyed your trip. If you start talking about moving there, in the continental U.S. and some places in Western Europe, given the state of political affairs. And she's like, yeah, you, like, I just let you ride sometimes, where you're like, like, you'll come home. Like, I, like, every time I go to Cincinnati, I'm like, what a great American city. And she's like, hey.
But I don't think you should get the Bengals job.
I think I would do great. She's like, okay, cool. Why are we moving to Cincinnati?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you own your own business. You can do it from anywhere. Why? What?
Right.
So, not to pick on Cincinnati, because I genuinely do love Cincinnati. Sure. It's a weird thing about me. I love Cincinnati and El Paso, and I also go through Western Kansas, and I'm like, this is great. I would move here. And she's like, hey, like, jangles her car keys in front of me. What are we doing? Coaches aren't that different.
Right.
You got to clear it with the wife.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them are riders.
Sometimes with the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, man, why do you think Joe Moorhead's still at Akron?
Go ahead. Tell me why Joe Moorhead's
still there. Because his son's finishing high school ball.
Yeah.
And because Akron is, like, I won't pull up Google Maps and waste your time, but, like, it's incredibly close to Pittsburgh where all of his people are.
Yeah.
And his family. Like, and think about all the places Joe Moorhead has gone and what his family's gone through as they went through all their formative ages. So that would have made his son, who's playing high school ball right now, like, probably 10 or 11 when he's going through all that bullshit at Mississippi State. By the way, you're a Yinzer, and Joe Moorhead's a Yinzer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
From Western PA, and that's who you are. And you go to, you're coaching at Fordham. Like, we and Joe, like, Joe and I have had a conversation about kids in Catholic schools and that kind of stuff. And you go from there, you're at Starkville and Eugene, and, like, think of the randomness that's involved in this. And so I can imagine, because I have an 11-year-old now, of, like, what if I was jerking him all across the country? I grew up that way. I was, like, the FBI was like, you're going here.
Yeah, right.
Fuck logic.
Right.
Don't care if your kid's in high school.
Right.
My parents were unhappy with where they were when I was halfway through high school, and they were just like, we'll sacrifice Steven's continuity in high school. I empathize a lot with coaching families. This is not on the board, but family's a huge part of it. The fact that I genuinely believe Dan Lanning when he says, I want to be here, my family wants to be here, is revelatory and game-changing for all of college football.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Lanning, and I've talked about this on many single wings before, I don't want to get back into the hagiography, I never know if I'm saying that word right, of the coaching profile, the blowjob piece, as I call it with you.
Yep.
Like, where we read that and we both roll our eyes or whatever. But I would like to sit down and talk to Dan Lanning one if I ever get a chance, about how he managed being the defensive coordinator at Memphis while his wife was in chemo and he had 4 children.
Yeah.
Because you and I are brought to our wits' end every day with the shit we have to do with healthy partners, with just like, I got to go pick this fucking kid up. And And the fact that his family feels settled and comfortable, unless it's an elaborate ruse, but, like, I have ways of finding out if these things are real or not, and I'm telling you that they're genuinely committed to being in the Pacific Northwest. Think about Mario Cristobal couldn't say that. Willie Taggart didn't say that. You go back, like, you got post-Mark Helfrich.
Mm-hmm.
and Oregon was this like cusp of a national title program that was a turnstile for coaches because of its geography. You think about all the other jobs that impacted that movement, and to now have the guy who I think is probably the most sought after person in college football. I might argue, and I don't know if Georgia fans would be that mad at me, that more people would seek him out than they would seek out Kirby right now. And I think more people would seek him out than Ryan Day, only because I don't think it's the same as Kirby. I don't think people would even try and budge Ryan Day or Kirby Smart.
Yes, yeah. That's a whole, we could unpack that a lot, but yeah, I'll go ahead and say that.
But what's on this, but like, again, you're talking about the idiosyncratic part of these personalities. This guy's like, no, I can be here for my kids' formative years, and they can go to high school here, we can be a family here, and we can be from here. I think he's from Missouri originally, but he feels very, I recognize him as like the kindred transient person.
Mm-hmm.
That's massive. So to go back to this board for a second, it's like, you know, I just did this on Nashville radio this morning, as I mentioned earlier. Like, Brent Key is, I think Brent Key was born in Bama and then grew up in Georgia. But, like, Clark Lee is from here.
Yeah.
Clark Lee is coaching at his alma mater, which is the street from the high school that he went to, the junior high he went to, and then a little bit further down the street from his childhood home.
One of his high school friends and classmates, Barton, is like basically the personnel guy.
Correct. One of the guys I did a refi years ago before we renovated our house, and like was like one of their buddies.
Yeah.
Who like texted me a picture when he got hired. Yeah. Like, it's that local. That matters tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, like, if you're, this is why I'll close on this. Like,
I have one more to ask.
Brent Key,
ahead.
Jeff Brohm,
yeah.
Kenny Dillingham so much as I can't remember if he's native Arizonan through and through. But, like, I know, like, Brent Key, Clark Lee, and Jeff Brohm, I feel like, are the two big ones where they're like, God, they feel of that place.
Yeah, sure.
You got to move heaven and earth to check all the boxes on our board for that, for it feels like, to make that move. Unless these guys just don't feel like they're getting those boxes checked at their alma maters.
Right. That's sort of the flip side of this, is that they also have to, if we're looking at this in terms of like, is this a good job, a potential new place? These are also the answers that get asked back to the current stop as to, are you meeting expectations in? And it's like, look, Georgia Tech can't change its playoff path. Georgia Tech's not like magic.
I think it's got a great playoff path.
Right. But, like, USF is probably a better example. USF can't change its playoff path. They're not magically going to get into the Big 12 tomorrow or something like that.
No, but again, I think if you can consider yourself one of the top three G5 jobs,
yes,
you
and
feel
I
good
think,
about that.
And I think USF is at least trying to figure out, like, okay, how can we make this palatable in all the other ways so that an Alex Golish type doesn't feel the urgency to be like, the first time we win 9 games, I got to go.
Yeah.
I have one more category on the board.
Okay.
And I mostly want to think about it because I think it's changed a lot. I'm going to go back to Florida because apparently that's all I can talk about. When Urban Meyer took the Florida job from Utah, he talked about how he thought Notre Dame was also on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought Florida was in a better position to win with the roster that they already had, that Ron Zook had assembled. A bunch of the players on the 06 National Championship were recruited by the previous coaches.
Yeah.
Does that matter at all now? Like, how much are you looking at?
You did ask me about this.
How much are you looking at, oh, this is the roster, or is the transfer portal completely blown that idea up where maybe it matters for like a couple of guys where you're like, I'd love to get to work with them, but by and large, you're like, I'm remaking the thing no matter what.
So this didn't come up at all conversationally since you asked me to do this, which is why I didn't put it on the board. It's basically the latter.
Yeah.
If you could come in and maybe have a good meeting with like a sitting, so like somebody should come in. If I'm the next Florida head coach and I'm in this process right now, I would love to get to talk to DJ Lagway as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's a pretty rare exception, though.
Yeah.
Look at the other open jobs. Is there anyone in UCLA's roster you give a fuck about? Is there any? No, I'm serious. Virginia Tech.
I mean, LSU is maybe this way. There are
Nuss
like
is out.
Some. No, but there are some. I think there are some like skill position players that you probably
maybe one
are,
or
like,
two.
You know,
maybe.
Like,
but those. I think that caliber. You could have NIL deals that take care of that.
Okay.
And you don't want anything. You don't want any. You don't want to walk into a situation saying like, "Ah, well, you got to keep this guy because we got this."
Oh no, yeah. Yeah. I guess I'm just like, I think before that big decision, but now it's...
Well, yeah, because that's the year zero concept, and that's taking 3 years to build
like,
it.
Now it's almost like part of your pitch as the coach is who you bring with you. Of like, I have a defense that's coming with me.
Correct. How many times have we talked about this?
Right,
Kurt Cignetti. If North Texas right now, as we record this, is maybe the best,
has a very good shot.
And that's because they pulled all of Sam Houston's defense with them.
Right.
Okay? We've talked about Wazoo all the time. Like, they imported South Dakota this year. This happens a ton.
Southern Miss.
Southern Miss is playing all the best Marshall players right now. And they're going to win the West in the Sun Belt in the first year.
Right.
But also at top end, like, this is why they hit the ground running at maybe the best team in college football at Indiana is because they had this core from JMU.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you bringing with you is a great interview question, but any of the guys on the board, even Franklin. Golish could definitely cherry pick a USF and bring it with him. Obviously, Key could do the same with Georgia Tech if he decided.
That also raises the urgency for a James Franklin, though, too, because the longer you're out, you don't have anybody you're bringing with you.
That's when you would lean more on the lieutenants that you hire.
Sure.
So those coordinator positions. Yeah. Definitely.
Okay.
All right. Do you feel satisfied?
Oh, yeah.
In this?
Yeah. I mean, like, have we sort of talked a lot about a very simple answer, which is it depends? Yeah. But I'm a lawyer by training. I love to talk endlessly about it depends. That's all we do.
I think what we learned here today is that James Franklin needs to get a fucking job immediately.
I bet he will. I bet we just manifested it. Phantom Island is produced by Michael Serber and presented by Homefield. Our theme music by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard comes from the song Phantom Island from their album of the same name. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.